6-1-3 in their last 10 are the Philadelphia Flyers. Is this just a little run? Do you think they've got what it takes to catch Boston?
Well, based on history here, they've seemed to finish strong the last few seasons, so they're just kind of following a pattern. And, you know, it's a long shot because it's only happened once in the last 10 years. I think the Blues pulled off, came from 8 or 9 back in 08, and I'm not sure about the exact number there, but it's somewhere in that ballpark, and so it doesn't happen that often. And as Ron Hextall pointed out yesterday, that, you know, you have to not only win, but you have to hope, you know, watch the scoreboard every night. So I would say it's a long shot, but there is some optimism here.
Will the Flyers then wait, do you think, right until the deadline to see if they're buyers or sellers?
I think they will. I'm not so sure that they're going to do. Hextall said yesterday that he insists that he's not going to add anything regardless of where they are. In other words, a part that, you know, a big part, an impact player, because it would probably mean at least sacrificing one young player, and that's something he doesn't want to do. So he's willing to go down with the ship here with what he has than give up, you know, a player. I'm not going to give names per se, but a player of the caliber of a Braden Schenn or someone like that. Not that it would be a Schenn, but just a player of that caliber.
What about like a rental, though, just to get, you know, like give up a draft pick, which we've seen, you know, you get that fifth defenseman or somebody like
that. I think they're overstocked in defense right now. Okay. Kimmo Timonen coming back today to practice for the first time, and if this comes off, they're going to have about 8 or 9 healthy bodies around town here. So it all depends. I mean, you have some guys like Luke Schenn who have a contract that's a real burden. You have a guy like Michael Delzato who's not, you know, basically he's going to be gone if they don't re-sign him. And Nick Schultz, same boat. So, I mean, they have guys like that. And we ask them, is it a distraction? They say, as usual, no, it's a business. We can't control, you know, what we can't control. But if there's going to be a deal made, I think there's going to be a defenseman in there somewhere, be it a Grossman, a Coburn, something like that, somewhere along those lines.
Which one of their defensemen do you think has the most trade value?
Of the four that I just mentioned?
Yeah.
I would say Nick Grossman in terms of his experience and what he, you know, his steady hand. Schultz is kind of an X factor here because, you know, he came in as a seventh spare part. He came in as an insurance policy. And, you know, with the Timonen thing happening late in the summer, then they quickly signed Delzato as another, you know, and make sure they had enough people. But Schultz has been a revelation. He's mm-hmm. been getting top four time here. And there's some question as to whether or not they will try to re-sign, you know, get him under contract because he's played so well. He just seems to fit in well here. And, you know, sometimes that's the way it works. A guy comes in, there's no expectations. He plays above his, maybe even above his career numbers. Next thing you know, they're talking about him being part of the, you know, part of the family.
What has, because Edmonton fans are thinking, Nick Schultz, because, you know, he struggled here in Edmonton a little bit, although on this team, everybody seems to struggle. What is it that he's fit in well? Who's he been paired up predominantly with in Philly?
Well, I think the one thing that earlier on he was playing with Delzato, and Delzato at the time was not doing so well. And then those two got together and it seemed like Delzato kind of calmed his game down. And at one point he had like a 6 or 7 game point streak. I think he actually may have been his longest of his career or tied the longest of his career. And so, I mean, that's the kind of thing that he's been doing. He's been playing with a lot of accountability and responsibility. And he's also, I think, a pretty good spokesperson, you know, just in terms of dealing with the media and seems like he's well-liked in the room. So, you know, I can't vouch for what he did before this, but just in the short time he's been here, it seems like he's fitting pretty well.
Wayne Fish, beat reporter for the Philadelphia Flyers, joins us. Wait, so let's say they're not going to make a move now, right? They don't want to salvage the future by any stretch. What do you think they do in the offseason? And I know it's hard to predict because the Flyers have been very unpredictable in moves, but is goaltending, is Mason still a major question mark? What's the one or the top two areas the Flyers need to improve on in the offseason?
Well, I think that they have these young kids, these four young defensemen that are all, you know, really raw. Gus Despair is probably the tops that list. The kid from Union College who led them to the NCAA title last year is ranked number one. And then Robert Hagg from Sweden number two, Samuel Morin number three, and Sanheim number four. And I think that a lot is there. Some one of those kids is probably going to make a run at it next year, maybe two. And so that's where you have to start with. And then that makes other bodies expendable. So, you know, as the names mentioned before, some of those older guys, those 30-plus guys, probably won't be here by the end of next season. That's just my guess. And how creative they get in the summertime, I guess, depends on where the salary cap is. And, like, for instance, an R.J. Umberger, that's a contract that's going to, you know, or that type of contract is going to be tough to unload. Vinny LeCavalier, how do you justify him playing the fourth line here for the next 3 years at $4.5 million a year? I don't know. But at some point, they're going to have to make some decisions there and maybe just take less value than on the dollar just to try to unload some guys because they can't keep carrying these guys for the roles that they're playing.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, you know, the guys that are carrying, so they might have to, you know, eat some of the salary, yeah. But they don't have a ton of cap space in Philadelphia. And I know we don't know exactly, but, you know, a lot of projections, maybe around 70, maybe 71 million, depending on the Canadian dollar and such. But, would you know, like Wayne Simmonds is obviously a no-touch guy. I think Sean Couturier is another one. When you look at, you know, some of those bad contracts you just mentioned, Wayne, of those players who maybe don't fit in Philly and maybe could be like a Nick Schultz somewhere else, who do you think still has something left?
I think that each of them has a little bit left. It depends on the team that they go to. If they go to a Chicago or, you know, that kind of a team with a lot of experience and they fit right in, you know, just another experienced hand and not a development project, then that's one thing. I don't know. I mean, it's a good point that list continually changes, because if they make the playoffs and were to make a run, then I think that and some of these guys that we're talking about have good playoffs, then do you have to take a second look and say, well, you know what, maybe we need to look at this again. So I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much here, and you know, you're not supposed to talk about players as if they're gone, but you know, I think each of those guys brings something to the table. I mean, look at it this way. Braden Coburn right now is struggling mightily. Mm-hmm. He's been injured twice this year. But if Timonen comes back and somehow by the end of the year they're back together again, I think all bets are off. He's a different player when he plays with that guy.
You mentioned Timonen coming on the ice. Now, I read your piece online. You were saying he was greeted by a round of applause from his teammates. How close is he to actually playing in your mind?
Well, let me clarify that. They basically gave him the old stick tap thing routine, which is what they give, I think, after fights. I think that he's about 10 days off. But you know what? Knowing him, he'll push the envelope, and I wouldn't be shocked if he was I don't think he'll make it to this weekend, but maybe next they have Carolina and Toronto next week. So I'm going to say one of those games, which is, a week from now? Carolina a week from now and Toronto 9 days from now, somewhere in that ballpark.
Do you think he would re-sign for one more season in Philadelphia, or because of the injury, the type of injury that he had, that this is it?
I think both. And you got to factor in he's going to be 40 years old.
Yeah.
He's been playing a long time. He's not, you know, you look at his NHL career, it's 16 years, but he played a lot before he got here, too. So, and a lot of playoffs, you know, you got to count that, too. All those Edmonton guys, don't forget, like Messier and Gretzky, when you look at their numbers, you say to yourself, well, they played this many years, but then you got to factor in another 200, 300 playoff games. That adds up too. So I think the same thing here. He is in the Olympics. He's been in 5 Olympics. That's, you know, things like that. You total all that themes up, it's a lot of stuff. So I think he's pretty much resigned to the fact that this is it. And I think I really believe when he says, I want to go out with my skates on. I don't want to walk away from the game being forced out. I think this is a big part of his crusade, is to try to get these last 20 games in, just so he can say that that the injury didn't, or not the injury, but the condition didn't force him out of the game, per se.
Jakub Voracek has 1 year left on his contract. He's obviously having a breakout season for the Flyers. They can start negotiating an extension after July 1st. I'm guessing they're going to want to keep him long-term. What type of money do you think he's going to get?
I wouldn't speculate on that, but Giroux is making, I think, 66 over 8, so something in that ballpark.
Wow, that match, eh?
Mm. Yeah, I do, because I think his upside is that he's committed himself now to, as you can see this year, he's lighter, quicker, and he's really taking the game seriously. And I think his upside is huge. I mean, for a big part of the season, he led the league in scoring. I can see him being among the league leaders for a long time to come.
Wayne, I was one of them who felt, this is a great start. He'll slowly taper off. It hasn't been the case. Only Patrick Kane has more points than him. Now, I know Crosby's missed a few games here or there, but, Voracek is the speed. You said he's lighter. There's got to be something else in his game, right? Is he seeing the ice better? Is it his teammates? Like, what's allowed this guy to be the second most productive player in the entire league?
I would say that, I talked to Jaromir Jagr, and Jagr is his friend. He comes from the same town, the Czech Republic, and was here for a year and watched Jake play. And he's basically said the same thing. He just made a stronger commitment to his physical being, both diet and working out. And, Jake downplays it a little bit. I think what he's trying to say is, gosh, I wasn't in that bad of shape before. But at the end of the day, he's in really good shape now. And you can see it in the last 15 seconds of a minute shift that he's not slowing down. And that late in games, he's getting production, whereas maybe before it wasn't quite as strong. So, the coaches, his teammates, they all say the same thing, that it looks like he's really he came in here on a mission, and it looks like he's doing pretty well on a mission.
Well, definitely hasn't tapered off at all. We appreciate your time, Wayne. Thanks.
All right, Chase. Take care.